Welcome to the Jewelers Podcast, the podcast that talks to jewelers, retailers, and industry supporters about their experiences and insights into the jewelry industry. Jewelers Podcast is brought to you by the sponsors of the Jewelry Industry Virtual Fair. Grab your tickets today at www.jewelryindustryfair.com, going live on the 11th to the 13th of March. Now for our first episode for 2021. Welcome back to the Jewelers Podcast, everybody. Happy New Year for 2021. We're starting a little bit late this year. It is February, but that's okay. Brett and I had a little bit of a break after a big 2020 and a long Christmas sort of holiday. How are you, Brett? Welcome back.
Yeah, hitting the ground running, that's for sure. Like most jewelers around the country, I think everyone's pretty busy at the moment, which is make hay while the sun shines or whatever the saying says. So, yeah, certainly back into it, all right.
Yeah, exactly. But how good is this year going to be? We've got so much happening already, and we will let you all in on some of those things really, really soon. But today we're thrilled to be starting 2021 with a really iconic Australian brand, Adina Watches.
Yeah, look, I was really excited to be talking to Grant because coming from Brisbane myself, I used to drive past the family's workshop, the Adina workshop there in it's just south of the Brisbane River, every time I went into town. So it's pretty iconic for me being a Brisbane Southsider. So it was really great to talk to Grant and see how they're forging forward in the current conditions and, making waves still too with the modern designs.
Yeah, well, Grant Menzies, he's joining us today for the podcast, and they're also really excited because they're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. They started in 1971 in Brizzy, as you said, and they're celebrating 50 years. So huge things to celebrate this year and really, really iconic brand.
Yeah, it's great to see another family business still at it too, and it looks like they'll be around for a lot longer. So
very good. Well, let's jump into the podcast and we'll chat to Grant. Enjoy this episode.
Enjoy.
G'day everybody, and welcome to the next episode of the Jewelers Podcast. We're thrilled to have with us today Grant Menzies from Adina Watches. Grant, how are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. And thanks so much for having me. It's wonderful in our 50th year to be invited along in this modern era of podcasting and the mediums are changing. I'm getting my head around so many different platforms now. It's even starting to get a little confusing, but it's exciting all at the same time.
Yeah, that's great. You are 50 this year. That's so exciting. Congratulations. Do you have a lineup of parties planned?
Well, we're calling it the hashtag Festival of 50. I'm actually 50 myself as well. So myself and all my mates are all 50. So we're not only 50 here at work, we're 50 on a personal level. So if we can roll it out across all of 2021 to be the Festival of 50, I think there's going to be some late nights, some sore heads, and a lot of fun's going to be had. But it does have a serious edge to it. You know, we're very proud of the fact that our family business has been able to endure 50 years, and there's been challenges along the way. And, you know, it's no secret that last year was probably the most recent one. So to come out the other side of that and to be able to celebrate our 50th years, and we want to do exactly that, it's certainly something to spruik about.
And Grant, I was looking on your website on the blog there too. There's a lot of good information on your website about the family and about the business. And I see you've got a lot of international partners. Like, so how did you guys work with all that over the whole COVID process? Not that it's finished at the moment either, but how are you managing working with international partners, which is such an integral part of your business?
Well, Brett, to make every one of our watches, we outsource to global component makers globally. And it takes about between 7 and 9 different factories between 5 and 7 different countries to create one of our watches. And so to keep the whole supply conduit rolling, we've been lucky enough to be working with basically all of our supplier partners for quite a long time. So we have a fabulous relationship with them, and we kind of understand one another. And usually when each watch is coming to fruition, you know, I'll jump on a flight and I'll head to our case maker and I'll talk to him, and we can talk to the engineers and discuss different things. It might be the same for the bracelet maker or the dial maker. But the way things are, that just doesn't happen. So every watch starts with a pencil drawing, and then we, you know, with 3D printing, we're able to get a very good look at how each component is shaping up before pulling the trigger to confirm. And we make every watch minimum 500 to 1,000 at a time. So we have to be fairly certain that everything's going to work. And I think there's an element of trust that our supply partners are going to come up with the goods for us. And to date, touching wood, they haven't let us down. I certainly miss catching up with our partners in person, you know, heading to Switzerland for the World Fair and all those sorts of exciting things that go hand in hand in the watch industry. We just haven't been able to do. Switzerland's probably been one of the toughest. At the moment, Europe is in all sorts of strife, and I really feel for our friends in Europe. You know, we buy a lot of movements from both Ronda and from EDA, and you think about all the micro brands and small brands like ourselves all around the world. If we don't have a movement, we don't have a watch. So to ensure that supply chain is working, we've been ordering just a little bit more than we would normally. If we order 1,000, we've been ordering 1,500 just to have a few up our sleeves. And that's actually, for one particular caliber from EDA, we're really struggling with the delivery. And it's one of our really popular Country Master work watches. And to those guys with that 955-122, because it's a specialist kind of execution that they make for us with the crown down at 4 o'clock, the specialist executions are just taking that little bit longer. We're down to basically scraping the bottom of the barrel. But I got through to EDA last night, and although they're in a, you know, trying their best to deliver, we look like we ought to have those movements next week, which is really great news for us and for our retailers that are relying upon those sales.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's very challenging. But tell us a little bit about Adina Watches. You started 50 years ago, and what's like?
My dad started our business, Adina, as you say, in 1971, 50 years ago. He's a watchmaker by trade. His goal was to create a watch that could be worn confidently every day in Australian conditions. Bear in mind, 50 years ago, everything was pretty much all being imported. And as a watchmaker, he did his apprenticeship at a shop that predominantly worked with Rolex. So he had a lot of experience working with waterproof watches and working with steel cases. So he saw it as an opportunity, because when I mentioned steel cases, most of the cases in those days were getting made from brass. So he sort of saw an opportunity to start producing a watch that was not only water resistant to suit the Australian condition, but made from steel. The difference when working with steel rather than brass was with the back cases. So when you would do up your back case of your watch back in the day, if it was made from brass, as you did up the thread, small little brass filings would come off the thread, fall into the watch, and obviously give the watch trouble. By using steel, which was a little more expensive, he could eliminate that and then get, you know, supreme reliability out of our watches. And we've sort of hung our hat on that sort of part of our business ever since. And we went through a succession of challenges. He had a business partner in the early days. He bought him out after 2 years. The old name of our watches was actually called Rolma Watches, R-O-L-M-A, which is now our company name, Rolma Industries. There was a Swiss brand called Olma. They said our brand was a bit close to theirs, so they asked us to change it or go into a licensing agreement. We decided to create our own new name, which was Adina. So Adina came into being on the dials of our watches late 73, early 1974. And then we progressed on from there, went through huge challenges when the Australian dollar was floated in the early 80s, all our bills to Switzerland, et cetera, because of the inflation that happened, all tripled basically in the course of a week. Dad tells stories of just watching, you know, a $100,000 debt to Switzerland turn into a $400,000 debt in the course of, really, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. That was crippling, but once again, relationship with our supply partners, they were able to sort of understand what we were going through as a nation and go, righto, just, just keep paying down your bills to us, all your debt to us, and we'll keep supplying you. And that is the old-fashioned way of doing things. And we've never forgotten those companies that certainly helped us out in the very beginning and every year since. So it's very special to us to have those long-term relationships, some of them even going back 50 years. We still work with the casemaker that that Dad started working with 50 years ago.
Wow, fantastic.
And it sounds like the process that the business uses as far as the supply chain, it hasn't really changed all that much over the years. Maybe the 3D design, but it sounds like it's quite a similar process still for you.
Yeah, we do follow the same set. We're not trying to recreate the wheel with each of our watches. We want to ensure that we're delivering to market a high-end quality watch that is not only reliable but looks good. And those steps to ensure that end result basically stay the same. You know, yes, we used to sort of send the hand-drawn sketches that started across by fax that then, you know, has made, you know, life incredibly, easier with the internet and with meetings, you know, Zooms, and being able to show things in real time, even just over the phone in a live WhatsApp sort of chat. We're able to talk to an engineer going, this is where the integration perhaps from the case to bracelet is not quite working, and we can see what needs to happen. Look to take a bit of, you know, steel off this part or polish this a little bit differently. So it's going to integrate perfectly to ensure that end result is the high caliber that, you know, with hopefully our retailers and our consumers alike have come to enjoy from Medina.
So the different types of technologies that you've adopted, have you changed any manufacturing techniques in-house as well as what other supply partners have themselves? Have you changed in-house techniques at all?
We probably use machines a little bit more, Laura, than we did in the past. It's still a huge amount of what we do is all done by hand. But we introduced to our production, bear in mind, we're producing about 40,000 watches, give or take, every year out of our workshop here in Brisbane. And some of the key areas is quite repetitious, but it's still critical to the end quality of the watch. And one of those is the length of the stem. Now, the stem is what attaches to the winder, or what we call the crown. The stem goes to the center of the watch and engages with the hands to change the time and the date. Now, the length of that stem is critical. Bear in mind that we're probably using 20 different calibers of movements across the collection, and all the case sizes are all different. So a stem is definitely not a one size fits all. So every stem has to be cut basically perfect to length. And we work towards a 0.02 tolerance in that space. So we put our hand in our pocket a half dozen years ago, and we bought a stem cutting machine from Switzerland. And that was about, I think it was about 70,000 Australian dollars for this one particular machine. Yeah, and yes, it's an investment, but the efficiencies that particular machine brought to it. And when I talk about this stem cutting machine, I say, I just cut stems. It couldn't be further from the truth. You know, when we used to cut our stems by hand, we used to have to do exactly that. We would have a blade and you would put it into a jig. You would then bring the blade across the stem, cut the stem, and then you'd have to chamfer it, polish it, and then by hand screw it up onto the crown, onto the end of the stem. Now, each one being done by hand, depending on your hand strength and all the rest of it, gave you a different stem length. So even though it would engage, by the time the watch got to our quality control, our last step in the chain, the stem might be a touch too long or a touch too short. So then the QC guy would then have to take the watch apart, take the crown and stem out, take the crown off, either pack it out a little bit or reverse, file it down a little bit, put it back on, test the engagement, and then repeat the process until it was right. It took a hell of a lot of time. So to actually get that for the production guys, they just go straight to the stems that are pre-cut by one of the apprentices to then put that straight into the watch. They're perfect every time we test 100% with a micrometer, and so that we can assure that every watch is there. So by the time it gets to quality control, we have almost zero rejections when it comes to that part of the process. So to say we've introduced new processes, we've probably introduced different machines, and with our more and more of our particular collection moving to mechanical, you know, we've had to, you know, introduce processes where we test each of the automatic movements before we case them up, and different sorts of things like that take an extra step, but are integral again for delivering the watch that's going to do the job at the end of the day.
And Grant, when I hear somebody talk in such detail and at length about the product they work with or sell, it's pretty clear that they love what they do. Do you think a big part of that is because it's your family business and you've grown up with your dad doing it, or is it something you actually really do just love watches, even if you weren't in the industry?
Yeah, well, I think you've got to be passionate about what you do. You know, the old story of you know, loving your job, you never work a day in your life, is certainly the case when it comes to myself, and I'm sure for Dad. You know, at 78 years of age, he's still a 7-day-a-week man. He loves it. He comes in on the weekend. I think he fluffs around a lot on the weekend and can get around away with it because I'm not here looking over his shoulder. But at the same time, he definitely loves what we do. I love what we do. And, you know, we've got a team that, you know, a lot of our key personnel have been with us a hell of a long time. You know, Cole, that looks after our logistics, he's been with us 30-plus years. He's a watchmaker by trade, joined us as a rep, then moved into production, moved into quality control, and he's in his mid-70s now, but still wants to be involved. So we created this logistics role where he can still get his teeth into everything that we're doing. Jason's, who heads up our repairs department, he did his apprenticeship up in Cairns, joined us 20 years ago, has a huge influence on our relationship with all of our retailers nationally. You can imagine producing 40-odd thousand watches a year. We have a return rate of about just under 2%, which we're pretty proud of, but they're still, you know, they're still machines and they still can play up. There's a bit of user error in there, to be fair. But, you know, you still have watches that come back. Jace and his repair team need to be talking with our retailers. He did his apprenticeship in a retail store, so he understands that retail space. So he's been with us 20 years. If he didn't like it, I don't think he would have stayed that long. Cameron, who heads up our production department, he did his apprenticeship with us. He's been with me 20 years also. Again, you know, very passionate about the design side of our business and how we can develop our watches, lift the standing of our brand and bring newer, different concepts into the styling of our watches. You know, in the past, for the first 45 years, really it was just Dad and I doing the design work. Now we have much more collaborative approach with the production guys to not only create great looking watches, but watches that we can build efficiently and that we can, obviously, where we want to have something that still has a huge affordability aspect to it as well. So it's interesting to have their feedback. So to have the boys with us for that sort of period of time, down in our admin section, Renee's been with us for the thick end of 15 years. So to have a very stable team that loves what we do, I think that then reflects on the watches that you see in the jeweler's windows.
Absolutely. What do you think is the secret sauce when it comes to your success in hiring and keeping the right team?
Oh, can we talk about the secret sauce? I don't know. A family business is an interesting animal, and you know, it's not a secret. You know, Dad and I certainly have our moments, and the arm wrestles can happen. We like to keep that to an after hours type of timing, but you know, because of the passion, and you know, it can bubble to the surface, and you know, some of the team get caught in the crossfire. But in saying that, you know, I think people in general like being a part of businesses that are passionate. Dad still calls on our client, our retailers that he started the business on, which is between Gympie and Rockhampton. So he heads up and sees those guys. We've got a retailer in that in that mix that's been with us from the very start. It's Patrick's. Their stop is 101 years old, and they've sold for the last 50 years our watches. So he's passionate. He takes that passion into the stores. I still look after all of Far North Queensland and a lot of key accounts down through the southern states. And, you know, when you walk in the shops, it's very, I don't know, we're openly passionate about our watches. If we weren't proud of them, you wouldn't want to walking in through the front store. So I think our team that backs us up and supports that passion, they're also invested in the brand. You know, they have their days too. You know, we are a family business. There's only 16 of us here, so we are a small business. And we live in each other's pockets in a workshop scenario. So, you know, you can have, you know, bring personal things into the office, but, you know, we are a straight talking business and we're able to sort of work through that. And I think that might be quite key to your initial question about what's the success. I think we are a very open and straight talking business. I am, Dad is, and the team are in general are very open about, you know, what might be going on in their worlds. And we're very sensitive that we are a family business and that we're sensitive to people's needs because they have needs as well, and families and all alike. So to understand that they're not just, you know, a machine building a watch or fixing a watch, I think is very important to any business, but it's super important to ours.
I think it's quite evident too when I looked on the website again, like, and I saw your staff members profiled on there, pictures of them, who they are, what they do. Like, you've got respect for your staff, so obviously they appreciate that and want to hang around.
Oh, mate, as I said, you know, the team is everything to me. And you know, we had the staff Christmas party this year. You know, we normally go out for lunch or dinner somewhere, but the year that we had in 2020, I felt that I wanted to have the whole team over to my house. So Nicole and I cooked a traditional Christmas lunch for the whole team. And we sat around the big long table and told some lies and had a few beers and had a traditional Christmas lunch, you know, ham, turkey, the whole bit. I pride myself actually on the old ham glaze. So it was good to show that off to the gang, you know. And then we opened it further afield to all the team's partners and our very close support team, like our graphic artists, our IT guys, you know, everyone, our printers, everyone that helps, you know, support the Adina brand, not only within our four walls, but, you know, from an external sense as well. So to get everyone at Christmas time round the table and just to reflect on 2020, I think, you know, and to appreciate all the work that was done to keep us going through some pretty difficult months, you know, sort of says that how we feel about our people and, you know, and that I think speaks volumes for itself.
COVID aside, Grant, how have you weathered the challenges of being an Australian manufacturer? That's a really challenging position to be in itself. How have you overcome just being an Australian manufacturer?
Oh, Laura, we, you know, probably about 10 years ago, we lost our way a little bit. You know, there was a little bit of complacency. We'd come off this huge growth, and probably our biggest growth years were from, you know, the very late 90s to the sort of mid to early noughties to late noughties. And we kind of got a bit sort of stuck in our ways a little bit. And I said to Dad, look, we've got to change or we're going to be that brand that people talk about at a trade fair. Oh, you remember those guys, you know, Grant and Bob, what was it over there, watches again? And, yeah. And have, yeah, they were nice fellas. And I just didn't want to allow myself to be the next Kodak or Blockbuster. And so we had to evolve. So we looked at machines like the one we discussed before. We looked at styles. We looked at what we were really good at. We're really good at making waterproof watches. We were starting to try to be everything to everybody. And so we took a good hard look at ourselves. And there was some, you know, strong discussions after hours about the future of the business and where we wanted to go. And it came down that both Dad and I both wanted the same things. You know, we wanted our watches to be worn and loved, but we needed to start to explore new markets. It was quite a tough period from a retail point of view. Online trading was starting to come into fruition. We only activate through the independent jeweler chain. We don't work for any of the chains. So each of those independent retailers, some of them weren't having, you know, sons or daughters coming into their mums and dads' businesses. So businesses were being closed up, and we were losing customers for nothing that we were doing wrong. It was just that trade was tough and people were hanging up their spurs, and jewelry stores don't traditionally get sold. They just get closed up. The amount of stock that a retailer carries on hand, they can do better out of a closing down sale than they can by selling a key turn business. So it was thing we had to have a good look at ourselves and try and create new ways of doing business. We had a few lucky things. The school where I went around, they were turning out, or their old boys association were turning 100 years. They commissioned us to make a watch. It's one of Brisbane's premier boys school. So in having Churchy endorse us to make a watch, that sort of launched us into a new space. We won then Horizon. We've had the railway people. We've had a very long-term relationship with them. We created a new 20-year service watch for men and women, and a 40-year bespoke pocket watch for the 40-year fellas. So that sort of, then this corporate space started to open up to us, and it's starting to grow. We're working now. We have a graduation piece with Bond University. We made here in Queensland on the Gold Coast. We made a 90-year watch for St Aidan's, one of the premier girls' schools here in Brisbane. We've also now delivered a special project to Hastings Deering for their special clients. So this corporate space of bespoke is becoming quite important to us. And when we showcased what we could do in a bespoke way in the 2019 World Cup of Polo Cross, I think it propelled us onto the stage a little bit to say, wow, these Adina guys aren't just making a few work watches. They're making some really beautiful high-end automatics. And that caught the attention of our retailers. That sort of then went hand in hand of us then embracing. And I'm not a social media person by any stretch of the imagination. And traditionally, our family, we always head over to Moreton Island, which is a sand island here. It's off Brisbane in Moreton Bay, and it's just stunning. And for two weeks, we're off the grid. And my wife, who's a keen social media user, I said to her about 4 years ago, I said, Nicole, when I get home, I've not only got to start using social media, I've got to love it. And you know, that I embraced it, and our business embraced it, and we've grown from that. You know, to be able to have a conversation with not only our retailers weekly, our I guess we call them Adina adorers, or hashtag Adina adorers. You know, that love everything that we do. We have a very engaged. You know, I've never wanted to put my hand in my pocket to buy followers. I wanted them to grow organic. I wanted them to be engaged. I wanted them to love what they do and what we do. And I wanted those Adina adorers to tell us if we were slipping up. You know, it's such a fabulous medium. Yes, you're on it all the time in a way, you know, but we've got a structure that we chat differently across our platforms. And whether we're chatting in LinkedIn, we're talking to our business communities, whether they're our corporate clients, potential corporate clients. We want to have thought leadership in there about what's going on in the watch space and what's going on in the jewelry space. With our Facebook, we have a program that we handle it in-house. So I'm not only showcasing new things that we're doing with, you know, beautiful artwork and beautiful imagery around our watches, we want to showcase things that we did 50 years ago. So we have Retro Thursdays. We feature our retailers that are the backbone of our business every Wednesday, and talking about not only our retailer, but where they are in Australia and what goes on in that region, so we can engage the region, engage the retailers. We have a community day on a Tuesday where we talk about what's going on in the Adina world. You know, for us this year, not only turning 50, we've picked up the timing rights for, you know, the second most prestigious Blue Water Sailing Yachting Classic in the Brisbane to Gladstone Yacht Race behind the Hobart Classic. So that's exciting for us. So we're invested with the B2G organisation for the next 3 years, which is really exciting. I was out at the club yesterday, and we've got some cool things that we're rolling out in the Brisbane to Gladstone space. And there's some beautiful synergies even in that partnership, which go back to that Patrick Stewart, which I mentioned earlier. They've raced and won that particular race so many times. And, you know, for them to be finishing in Gladstone, you know, we can bring, you know, Patrick into that conversation. And again, you know, it really demonstrates how passionate we are about, you know, featuring our retailers. You know, we have an online channel, and I don't make any apologies for that. We had to embrace that space. And I was the whipping post around the trade for about 4 years ago. It wasn't the Edina website, it was Grant's website. So it had its own personality. But we knew that we had to embrace that space. And if we've been able to share all those learnings as our retailers sort of, you know, plow headlong into having their own online channels, we've got great learnings out of it, and we're sharing those learnings with our retailers. We want our retailers to survive. You know, it's, you know, the extra profit that we've, you know, margin that we've picked up on watches that we have sold them on, we've been able to plow back into our retailers. We have a strong decaling program. So each of the retailers now have strong decals that are all featuring Edina that feature the artwork. All that costs money. We never had the budget for that before. So we were able to start rolling that out. So I know this is a very long answer to that initial question, but it all goes in hand in hand to what we've done to embrace the newer ways of doing business that not only set us up for surviving COVID, but we thrived, especially in the back end, by having fabulous imagery that we could share with our retailers, having strong social presence that we could be very, very nimble in changing what we were doing. And during that first initial lockdown, my wife Nicole says that I was coming home with harebrained schemes every other day of, you know, how to activate with our retailers that we were encouraging to do the right thing by, you know, if they stayed open, they could stay open. All the majors had closed their doors. In a way, for the independent channel, it was a free hit. So we had to sort of talk to our retailers about how they could do things and how we could deliver the store. You know, if they had sales of customers, we could then drop ship straight to their customers. So there was a raft of harebrained, you know, ideas that I was trying to come up with, from, you know, working with Legacy, one of our charity partners, to have a light the dawn in conjunction with the RSL. So you bought an Edina watch, you got a candle, the light the dawn, and $20 was going to Legacy. So all these different ways of activating with our not only our retail partnerships, but our charity partners to try and ensure all of our survival kept me awake quite a lot, especially in March and April, I can assure you.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. And it's, I mean, good on you for being so innovative and so dynamic with changing things and, you know, embracing new technology and, you know, obviously making sure that everybody that is a stakeholder in your business, and I mean, you know, consumers and retailers, and then obviously your team, has, you know, something to look forward to with what the brand's bringing. I think that's really, really clever business. So, yeah, it's great to hear that you've done pretty well considering how challenging the last year has been. It's obviously a lot of work has gone into it, and well done.
Oh, thanks a lot. You know, like Dad and I sort of have a saying, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. That's not the case. And there are some other, you know, Australian brands sort of, you know, trying to get into the watch space, but to manufacture and do all our production here in Australia, you know, we pretty much all got this space to ourselves as an Australian brand that designs the entire range and does all our assembly in-house here in Brizzy. It brings its challenge both technically and now, you know, also with the innovation. You know, we've been through the smartwatch. You know, you guys should be making a smartwatch. Huh? We know who we are. We know what we are. We're not going to jump to the next big thing. And we saw in the 80s with Swatch, you know, our retailers, oh, you guys got to make it, you got to make a watch that looks like a Swatch. And we're like, no, that's not us, you know. And then also then in the 70s, it was sort of like, oh, you guys got to make a digital watch, you know. Well, that's not us either, you know. So then now in the smartwatch era, everyone said, oh, and I had a number of conversations with journalists that could smell the blood in the water, you know, the death of the last Australian watch manufacturer with the onset of smartwatches. And the answer that I always had that I posed back to the journos was always, you know, do you have a story about a watch? And invariably, oh, yeah, my dad gave me a watch for my 21st, and I should wear it more. And after I let him prattle on for a little bit about this watch, that I had this big long story about how they broke it and fixed it and it's in the drawer and how they should work. I said, do you reckon we're going broke? I said, yeah, I've never thought of it like that. And we were able to sort of turn those conversations of being dead in the water into going, wow, you know, watches have such a powerful intrinsic value that means something to somebody for 18th, for 21st, for graduations, for your first watch. As I said, you know, and I think that almost everybody, if they have a think about it, has a story about a watch. So that's the space that we choose to engage in. We make watches to last. We make watches that we can fix if they need them, and we want to carry the parts that ensures that we can deliver those promises to the people that choose to buy an Edina.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah.
I tend to feel like a Jets watch, particularly now, is their main piece of jewellery as well. Like, you may have your wedding ring or possibly a dress ring. Watch still seems to be the main piece of fashion jewellery for a man. Like, even though we have our phones that tell us the time, it's not about that. It's about something a bit more special.
Oh, phones don't tell you the time. They're there to talk on. you've only got to jump on to any. There's a few really great sort of watch forums, on Facey, and the amount of guys in particular, they just have the watch bug and just love chatting anything watches. And you do get some pretty hardcore watch fiends on there, but it just goes to show, Brett, that there definitely are people out there that just love their watches and they're looking to have watches that, you know, not necessarily everybody else has got. And that's where we can sort of also have a strength there, where you can go and buy something generic from a big global brand, and it's no different to anything else. But, you know, if we're making a run of 500 watches and that's the end of it, well, there's only potentially 500 people that might be wearing that globally. So there is those nice little synergies for people that want to wear something different. And, you know, with us producing more mechanicals and, you know, the watches that we'll be releasing this year, especially, we're doing some pretty cool things and being quite innovative, and I don't want to let the cat out of the bag just yet. But there's something there's a particular innovation that sort of has sat in the, you know, right in front of your nose all these years, and we go, well, what if we did this? Would that work? And then we go, yeah, it works. So, you know, that'll give us the ability without going on too much more, I'll certainly let my tongue slip, and then the cat will be out of the bag. But it's a pretty cool little idea that we sort of toyed with about 10 years ago. And for the life of me, I don't know why we didn't go on with it, but we didn't. But, it'll be quite cool to roll that out probably next month. So, and that will give a bit more flexibility for not only our retailers, but also for our consumers that want to wear automatics, but, you know, might only want to, you know, invest in quartz initially. So, yeah, so it's quite cool.
And you told us a bit earlier about, like, what's involved with making a new model, but how long does it actually take, particularly if you're only making a limited run of something for a special, a corporate customer or, run a 500, like you're saying? Like, what's the timeline involved?
Yeah, look, depending on the complexity, Brett, of the model, go back to this really beautiful bespoke model that we made for the World Cup last year. So we made 100 gents and 100 ladies. There were 50 for the gents players and 50 for the ladies players, and they were plated in a certain pattern that the only way you could own this particular watch was to play for your country at the World Cup. And then we made 50 offshoots of that particular model plated a different way that was for the supporters. Now, that model took us every second of a year to bring to fruition, to the point that my wife, Nicole, had to get on a flight to one of our suppliers to pick up the one-touch buckles during the week of the tournament. She hand-delivered them back to our workshop. We put them all together and were able to present the watches on the Saturday night. So, it can take anywhere from, if it's a very simple design, 6 to 8 months. More standard is about a year. Very complex model, like the limited edition, one of the 50-year models. We've been working on it already for well in excess of a year, and it'll probably come out mid-year by the time we sort of get it all together. So it's not uncommon for us to have things going, you know, north of a year, 18 months. We did even have one really troublesome child that sort of did take just under 2 years to get together. But, you know, you want to make sure, and that's, I guess, the beauty of handling everything here in Australia. You know, we're not reliant on third parties to say, yeah, that's good enough, when near enough is not good enough. We don't, you know, it's a cliche, we don't sacrifice quality for price. We would rather work with our long-term supply partners and pay a little bit more rather than jump to another factory because I can get it, you know, $2 cheaper. That's not what we're about. We'd rather have that premium quality that we can deliver in the long run. And if it takes another month or it takes another 2 months, well, that's what it takes, you know.
Grant, what's one of your favourite memories as a kid growing up in Adina Watches?
Well, I joined the business when I was 25. So I went out and dad wanted me to get, he didn't ever ask me to come straight into the business. So I went out to get a little bit of life experience first. So there's two memories that sort of really resonate. One, when I first started, and that I joined the business as a rep. When I was living overseas for a number of years, and I came home and dad sort of asked me what I was going to do next. And I said, I think I'd like to be a rep. And he said, well, who are you going to rep for? And I said, oh, you know, obviously I wanted to go into something which I perceived as very glamorous, which was sporting goods or alcohol or something like that. And he goes, I've got a repping job going here. You love people, you love traveling. Why don't you come and join the business? But if you're in, you're in, you know? And I said, oh, right. He said, there's lots of sons and daughters coming into their mums and dads' businesses. You'll have something in common with them, and you know there's an opportunity to work together. I sort of said, oh, righto. So he took me out for a week and sort of showed me the ropes on what repping sort of looked like, and we had one bag of watches, literally a sample port full of watches, and I headed down over the border into Moree, and I stopped at a retailer called Stephen Spark Jewelers. It was called Freeman's in those days, but Stephen owned it. Now, I walked into Stephen's shop at about 10 to 5, and I introduced myself as the new Adina rep. And I saw in his counter he had half a dozen Adinas. I said, mate, you are killing it with our stuff. You've only got, you know, 6 left. And Stephen's a very, very dry country fellow. He goes, Grant, that's all I carry. And I was just like so deflated because I had this imagery of what you know, these huge ranges of our watches out in these stores. And Stephen said to me, he said, mate, come back tomorrow and we'll have a look what you've got, you know. And he's only a couple of years older than me. And so he was having a bit of a crack with his own shop. And I thought, well, I'm going to be the cheapest rep, you know, that we've ever had. So I went to Woolies and I was buying some things for breakfast. And there in Woolies was Stephen. And he looked at me, he goes, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm buying stuff for breakfast, you know. I'm going to be the cheapest rep on the road, you know, and I told him the story, and he goes, go over there and get another steak. And I said, why would I not going to do that? And he goes, come over home, you stay at my place, grab another steak, and you're up for red wine. I said, the guy didn't know me from Adam, you know, and so I stayed the night with Stephen. Like, Stephen and Robin have become very, very, very close friends of ours, and you know, a fabulous customers in their own right. But that story of, you know, the how when I started, this guy, and he carries a huge range of our watches. So I think back of those 6 that he started with, that's gone. But there was the the perception, I think, of what I thought our brand was and who we were. And I worked out pretty quickly that we weren't that. And so then as a kid, though, the thing I remember probably most was Dad actually, when I was really little, he used to work. The guy's got a huge capacity for work and still does. He would put together watches of a nighttime. So they had an office, or he had an office with just him and an admin person. So him and Joan were just in the city, and where he could sort of just go around and see all the local watchmakers and local shops in Brisbane City and sell a few watches. But he would put them together of a nighttime. So I would always go and say goodnight to him at this bench that was in this small little sort of sewing room, hot water system room in our family home here in Brisbane. So the guy would work, you know, huge hours of a night time, fall into bed, then get up the next day and head off and sell those watches that he'd made during the night, you know, and then he'd sort of say to the retailers, oh, look, if you fix me up now, I'll give you an extra percentage. And he would run to the bank with the check, drop it in, and then pay your bill overseas. So there was that, and there was always you can't help but laugh at this. I'm sure the bloke still thinks when he's speaking to an overseas supplier that there's trunk lines. Now, you know, in the old days, the trunk lines, you had to speak quite loudly. Well, now he'll be talking to Switzerland or talking to Hong Kong or somewhere,
yelling,
and he will shout. And it's like, Dad, this is not trunk lines anymore. You don't have to yell at these people, you know. They can hear you just fine. But it's, you know, I remember him sort of talking, you know, at home of a night time to Switzerland and yelling at these people, you know. I was like, oh, goodness, Dad, just give it a rest. So, but he continues to yell. So that's a definite throwback to the old days of trunk lines and him talking at home on the family phone and trying to get off as quickly as possible because the phone call was costing a fortune.
Yeah, love it. Oh, that's hilarious. That's hilarious. Very interesting. Great stories.
Oh, there's loads of stories. And you know, sometimes I think, oh, geez, I'm boring people with all my sort of anecdotes and stories. And, you know, when Dad and I, obviously, when we could go overseas, it's one of our trips is a two-week trip, you know, that we'll go and visit a whole host of our sort of factories that, you know, our supply partners. And when we're in each other's pockets without any sort of interruption, I guess, from the day-to-day running of our business, is that's when you hear all these old stories that come out, you know, of how he would start and how he found different suppliers. And, you know, I still just shake my head, you know, and he's a very quiet, conservative fellow. I can't believe he even got on that plane the first time in his sort of late 20s to go over to Switzerland and basically press the flesh to get it going, because he is such a quieter fellow. And the people that know him well sort of see that side of him. But from a business sense, he does have a certain presence, you know, that people have known. And, you know, they always ring Dad if they want a better price, you know. I won't budge, but, you know, is Bob there? No, he's not there. He's not there, because he's soft as the day's long, you know. And, you know, we still, you know, we're trying to stamp out the amount of credit that we give to our retailers, some that have been with us from the start. And, you know, we don't want to forget where we've come from, but the days of kind of credit and what the factories kind of give us, you know, the watchmaking fraternity or watch production fraternity is a lot of family businesses, and you know, they understand that we can't produce a watch and sell a watch until each of the nine supply partners that might be going into producing that watches have all delivered their widgets to our place. So, you know, it is quite common to run, you know, 90 to 120 days with our overseas suppliers. That was sort of trade normal. But these days, with the whole world sort of tightening up, I guess, you know, that leniency, you know, we're still lucky. We could probably run with a lot of them 30 to 60 days, because they understand what we're doing and how we're doing it. But the ability to have long-term credit with our retailers, they're sort of kind of gone, you know. So that's sort of been a change that's come about over the last few years, especially since the GFC, really.
What do you think Australian manufacturing need? Is there additional support that you think is needed here in Australia?
There's a swag of Australian manufacturers out there. And I've, about 4 years ago, I joined an association called Family Business Australia, which is exactly that. It's all family businesses. But the amount of manufacturers that are there, everybody from, you know, I've been lucky enough to meet Mel Cooper. Obviously, she's the CEO of Cooper's Brewing. That's a family business. Ginger beer, you know, Bundaberg Ginger Beer. That's a family business. There's a lot of manufacturing that goes on in Australia behind the scenes, and a lot of it's done by family businesses. But I guess as a family business, we're all pretty humble. We just go about what we do, and we don't need to beat the gong about we're doing this and we're doing that. And you know, a beautiful story that came out of COVID was with AHB, a family business from over Adelaide Way. They produced mattresses. Australian made for years and years. They gave back the JobKeeper payments that the government had given when they got back on their feet. So there's some incredible stories out there of Australian manufacturing, and it's definitely there. I think if we, my personal feelings is, I think if we rely on government support to try and get manufacturing up and running, we run the risk of not being efficient. So once we lose that real edge on efficiency that we build off putting our own hand in our pocket, that we are completely responsible for the future of our business, well, then the efficiencies can come. You know, you can talk about tax breaks, and there's been some fabulous initiatives, you know, rolled out by the federal government last year that helps with tax write-offs. But you know, you still need to be turning a profit to be able to take advantage of those tax write-offs. And those sorts of things definitely help, as long as you're profitable. But for a business, especially manufacturing, that's just starting, that sort of your profitability can be a little bit further down the track. So, you know, tax deferment and that sort of thing can come in to help. But overall, I think the responsibility and the onus rests with us, that and the belief. I think the deep belief that we can manufacture here and we can do it efficiently. Once we start believing that again, and we don't sell off to the highest bidder overseas, and we keep it here, and the Australian public have been absolutely fabulous rallying around businesses like ours, but hundreds of other Australian family businesses that do produce here, that they're seeking out businesses like ours. And yeah, you only see on our, you know, you see when you Google reviews, oh, I'm so happy that we're able to support, you know, Australian family business. And it makes you proud. It makes you really proud. And it makes you, you know, the sleepless nights worthwhile. It makes, you know, the risks that you take. It makes the days in the car to do what we do worthwhile. When you see, you know, Mara Parkettle from wherever, Australia, leaving a Google review going, you know, So proud that we were able to support your family business, keep up the good work, your 50 years and all those sorts of things. You know, you don't have to beat the gong about it. You just quietly smile to yourself and think, wow, that's pretty cool, and sort of get on with the job at hand.
Love it. Yeah, that's great points.
So, and I can imagine you're encouraging the next generation of family into the business now as well, aren't you?
Mate, it's a good question. My family's still quite young. I've a 12-year-old girl, Estella, a 10-year-old boy, Archie, and boy and girl twins, Clancy and Audrey, who are 8. Estella has spent the last 2 school holidays here helping around the office. And I just think by introducing our family, my sister doesn't have a family, she's my only sibling. But by introducing our kids into it, just to start to understand the culture of what a family business is. It was really cool to hear Stell on the phone running into Chrissy, just answering the phone, and our retailer saying, oh, are you Bob's granddaughter? Are you Grant's daughter? You know, so having that connection with not only her, to our retailers, also our retailers seeing it back the other way, started to sort of see, well, these guys are fair income about hopefully introducing the next generation to it. you know, I couldn't think of anything better than one or all of them coming on board. There's no guarantees in that. I didn't ever see myself being here. And, you know, I couldn't think of working anywhere else. But, you know, the gang, hopefully, you know, one of them might end up here. And so we can hopefully kick on for another 50 years. You know, I couldn't think of anything better than doing the 100-year logo. Whether or not I could see the 100-year logo in, being that I'm 50 this year as well. I think that might be drawing a fairly long bow. But I hear Dad talk about his father, who was also in the trade. He worked for an old a wholesaling firm called Willis & Sons, you know, and in those days they had, you know, all sorts of different brands all under one roof. But he passed on in 1975, so our business was only really 4 years old. And Dad sort of, you know, does reflect at times, and he says, oh, you know, I wonder what Archie would think if he could see us now, you know, with the infrastructure that we've built out and the amount of watches that we've produced over the past 50 years.
Yeah, it seems to be planned by the sounds of it. So here's hoping.
Fingers crossed.
No, it'd be fabulous. I love having him here. Sometimes they get under our feet a little bit, but you know, they're always welcome. You know, the kids are always welcome here, and I'm always keen to stress to them that this is not a play place. It's a place of work, to be respectful of the team and what they do. But if they want to help out, they're more than welcome to. And over school holidays, you know, invariably they do show up here if my wife's working, or, you know, we can't arrange four different play dates across the summer to farm the kids out to, you know.
So they end up packing watches and, you know, packing invoices or whatever, cleaning the stock room.
Absolutely. Well, when I was 12, I was certainly here picking orders and helping. You know, those days you had a lot more sort of Brisbane City-based watchmaking, sort of watchmakers that needed parts. So, you know, I remember as a 12-year-old, it was great. You know, you get dropped in at one end of the Queen Street Mall by the apprentices, who they just wanted to sit in the car and smoke and look at the girls walking past. And I would go down the Queen Street Mall, running up and down all the buildings, dropping off parts. You know, it was hello, Mr. Such and Such, and hello, Mr. Such and Such, and oh, so hello to your dad. And, you know, so I just absolutely loved it. You know, I think back to this one in the old Woolworths building. It had this lift where you had to sort of use the handle, and you would, I know it's sort of radio, not TV, but you'd have to wind it like out of Are You Being Served? And this cage would go around you and think, well, if I survive this, it's another time that I've survived the Woolworths lift, you know. But you'd go into these and drop off all these parts, these to these trade watchmakers, and then the apprentice would pick me up down the other end of the Queen Street Mall, you know, half an hour later after I'd done all the runs and saved him all the trouble, you know. But now I look back at those sorts of things really fondly, and, you know, see it as part of my own personal, you know, introduction into the business, and I guess that introduction of the culture of the family business. And you know, dropping off those parts, it's a kind of a shame that the trades changed a lot since those days, and you don't have those tradespeople about. But at the same time, you know, we can't dwell on the past. You have to keep looking forward.
Grant, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, and thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And congratulations to you and to Bob for hitting 50 years. It's a huge achievement.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat to you guys today. You know, it's I'm insanely proud of our family business and what we do here, and the opportunity to chat about it is fabulous. And so thank you again for that. You know, for 50 years, you know, like I said earlier, I'm looking forward to the next 50. Might see it in, but with any luck, that 100-year logo does get created, and my little gang get the rewards that I've been lucky enough to enjoy for my time here over the last 25 years.
That's fantastic, Grant. Yeah, thanks again for today, and I wish you all the best moving forward with the business, with the family business.
Yeah, cool. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us on the Jewelers Podcast. To find out more about how you can be part of the Jewelers Podcast, head to our Facebook or Instagram page. And don't forget to register for the Jewellery Industry Virtual Fair at www.jewelleryindustryfair.com. See you there.